Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, friends. This is Nick, and I'm here with my co-host, Terry, and this is Hell No, the radio show. Hell No, the radio show is a socially conscious water cooler talk show about what's going on in the world as we feature some guesting callers who express their thoughts. Hell No is friendly, it's funny, it's real, and it's focused on empowering the truth. We give a voice to people who feel left in the dust. This program is a lot of things, but it's not democratic, it's not fascist, it's not politically correct, or a place for sacred cows. What we do is we advocate for peace, critical thought, education, reading, and certainly social awareness. So, go write down this telephone number and give me and Terry a call to share your thoughts on our discussion stirring topics on tonight's Hell No episode. Telephone number is area code 718-508-9419. Then when prompted, dial option number 1 so you can be live in our switchboard. Again, that telephone number is 718-508-9419. Hell No is a one-hour show, and we take calls in the order we receive them, so please sit tight. Of course, we can receive email anytime, hellnotheradioshow@gmail.com, as well as on our Facebook or Twitter pages with direct messages. Of course, our show is brought to everybody from our loyal, beloved, trusted, and highly recommended sponsors, and Terry's going to tell us about them now.
Tonight, we have a new sponsor, and that is Black Lightning Opal Company. Black Lightning Opal specializes in precious opal, not semi-precious. The semi-precious is the little white things that you see in the store with a couple of color flecks in them. Precious opal is a whole different world. Precious opal is the second most valuable gemstone on the planet when you get into the high-end stuff. Black Lightning Opal carries a wide variety of precious opal: black opal, crystal opal, smoky opal, Endomucca boulder opal, which is a rarity. Only one man in the world knows how to cut that stuff. It's remarkable. And a beautiful pastel opal, gold opal. All of it is Australian. All of it is rare, and all of it is beautiful. If you have an interest, you have somebody in the family that loves opal, you want to get something beautiful for someone, give a call to Black Lightning Opal, 414-406-9999, and they'll be happy to help you out. Again, Black Lightning Opal Company, dealing in the finest Australian precious opal. 414-406-9999.
Not to be confused with the less attractive Buick opal that they made for several years.
Oh, yeah. Ooh. No good. No bueno Buick opal.
No bueno Nova. They should have called that one the Nova.
Yeah. That's right. So, with all that said, moving rapidly inward and onward, one of our very regular features is passing personages. And today, the bassist from King Crimson and also Asia, the group Asia, passed away at age 67. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that, Nick?
Yes, sir. His name was John Wetton. He was born in 1949, passed away the 31st of January. Put at 67 years old. He was an English guy, not only a bassist but also a singer-songwriter. He was a frontman and principal songwriter for, again, the group Asia, which I remember pretty well growing up as a kid. It was one of his biggest commercial successes. Their self-titled debut album, Asia, sold 8 million copies worldwide. It was Billboard's number one for 1982. So John Wetton had a pretty illustrious career there. The man did a lot. He played. There's a list here of people he collaborated with and played with that is almost a mile long, and a very notable career there, and definitely another loss in the category of artists and entertainers. A lot of big shoes to fill for people coming up.
Well, you know, it's really been sort of a nonstop litany. We are losing one entertainer after another after another after another. I'm not talking about small potatoes. I mean, we have lost so many major forces in the music industry and so on. The one that still amazes me is that nobody from the Stones has passed away. That's just incredible to me.
You know, don't even bring things like that up. What are you doing? Knock on wood, you're jinxing the band.
I'm not jinxing the band. It just, I mean, Keith Richards died a long time ago. He just doesn't realize it. So.
Here's the problem, Terry. The problem is we're losing our greats, and we haven't had a lot of recent greats and a lot of, you know, the last few years. I mean, so
yes.
When they're
very
gone,
true.
We have their music, we have their art they're left with, coming up to replace, I mean, it's, the times have just changed so much. I mean, big superstars in anything, it's really tough. I mean, you look at different artists in different genres, and in country, Chris Stapleton is a really outstanding musician. He's a great artist, and it's just kind of funny that it took years. The guy won awards before his stuff made the popular radio stations. And, you know, I had mentioned to people, oh, you know, Chris Stapleton, nope, never heard of him. I mean, what? You know, for years. And all of a sudden, you know, this stuff hits. So, I mean, there's great stuff out there. And unless you're looking for it or go to local shows and pay attention to the music scene and just listen to the mainstream stuff on the radio, you're probably going to miss out on a lot of good music. And, I mean, I remember when it used to be, you know, you talk to your friends and your friend groups and who are you listening to? Who do you like? What shows are going on around town? And, yeah, you know, so it's out there, hunt it down, find it, because there's always going to be people born every day with great talent and something to offer and just amazing musicianship. And I really, it's not something that you can really pick up and learn. You're either born with it or you're not. And just through the way the genetics pool works, we keep getting people that are born and raised and they just pick up that guitar. You know, I saw something on TV with a young guitarist who had been separated from his birth parents. The guy was adopted. And they had no idea until they did a bunch of testing and found the guy's parents, why the guy's dad was a very well-known guitarist. And, you know, it just goes to show this kid who had no idea had just picked up and taught himself guitar at a young age. And, I mean, again, like, make the case for garage bands. I mean, now it's wintertime, and if you live in a cold, snowy area, you might not want your kids setting up shop in the band, practicing in the garage. But, hey, if you can swing it and find a way for them to learn it, go for it.
You know who we have never really done anything by on the show is Buckethead. And
Buckethead, that just occurred
to me. So you should write that down. Buckethead is a very unusual individual. He's agoraphobic. And he always performs wearing something over his head. Never says a word throughout his entire performance. He plays solo on stage. Let me tell you, putting a two-hour show on with a single electric guitar is not an easy thing. And keeping people's attention during that time is a very difficult thing. Everything's instrumental. And people nowadays are really not very tuned into instrumental things. So maybe next week we'll do the show on and have Buckethead for the music. You want to jot that down as a reminder, Nick?
I did. You know what? Another. Go ahead.
Amazing. He is a phenomenal guitar player. Freakishly long fingers. You look at his hands. He's tall and very slender, and he's got these amazing fingers. His fingers are fully an inch and a half longer than mine are. A remarkable thing. We'll have to do some Buckethead next time around.
Within the category of obscure and not artists, have you heard of Wesley Willis? Do you know who Wesley Willis is?
I do not. No.
I'm going to just leave that one. Anyway, the guy's a Casio keyboard. I don't think he's with us anymore. He was in Chicago, and the guy was a schizophrenic, and had you know, grave mental ill problems, but yet he was a performer. He made music, and some of his stuff is all made with a Casio keyboard. Wesley Willis, look it up sometime. I mean, some of it's crazy, obscene, bizarre, but not something you'd encounter every day. There's a lot of interesting things, and you know, we say, what is art? What's music? What's good? What's bad? I mean, it's all subjective.
Yeah, it is.
Well, Buckethead is on the list, man. Buckethead is on our list.
Yeah. The problem we're having right now, as you rightly pointed out, is that the greats are just disappearing and they're not being replaced. It's kind of like what happened with the movies from the mid-20s until early to late 60s. We had quite a golden age in the movies, and after that things really fell apart, and what we're calling great nowadays ain't so great at all.
Ain't so great sometimes, they're correct.
And the thing that I'm getting really tired of is the quote end quote social media among the stars, their way of tweeting this and doing that and calling each other names. That is getting so tiresome. It really is. It's
well, you know,
it's tiresome. It's not
my thought
fun,
on that is
tiresome.
Again, whether it's musicians, actors, sports people, your job is to do a certain thing. Yes, of course everyone has an opinion, but when we have celebrities, Hollywood people, musicians, and athletes using their stardom to advance causes, it's just not good. It's not a good thing. I don't want to get into more than that. I think we need to go back to respecting each other's musicianship and stick in our box. You know, but then again, which I'm completely knocking myself out of that same statement by saying so many people have gotten so much done through their music. And I guess the difference is where it used to be done through a written song and lyrics and the message was there, now it's they're using their messaging through, again, social media, as you said. But what about the music? Make music with the message. Maybe that's what I think. We have a caller. Should we take a caller as a thought on
Let's take
on
a caller,
point?
Please. Sure.
Let's take a caller. Caller, your telephone number ends in 6838. You're on the air with Nick and Terry. Tell us your thoughts.
Hi, good evening. Speaking of music.
Hi. Music.
I think music's real important. I think it has a lot of therapeutic value, both emotionally, socially,
absolutely,
culturally. I think it's soothing. And I agree with you, Nick. And I think one of the issues is, and again, I'm a songwriter. I'm not a musician. So by no means am I a Buckethead or Steve Vai or anything like that. Who is? And but if you look back, it wasn't so long ago that we created blues and rock and roll. I mean, we created a sound that elicited an emotion that was deeply ingrained, but yet it was something completely new, and it was done by skillful musicians and artists who perhaps couldn't even read music. But could hear it and play it or replicate it or modify it. And I think now what we have, as I kind of tamper in music, is so much electronic that we can override this, we can compress that, we can pull this up, we can pull that down, and or you get a $29.95 mastering job done that through computers that sound pretty bad too. There's not a lot of creative new sound out there.
No, there's not. You know something else that's interesting to notice? If you look at the music of the 60s, there was so much emotion in a lot of those songs. There were so many messages. We didn't see a lot of that in the 70s. And I mean, we did, but I always, in my head, what sticks out is the 60s and then the 90s. The 90s was grunge and a lot of the punk movements and some of the other really talking about what's going on in society. We've sort of lost that. Maybe in the 2020s, maybe it's a 30-year cycle. I don't know. But, I mean, we just really don't have a lot. There's certainly not a lack of angst in the world. There are enough people who are mad as hell, but they're not putting it to paper. They're not putting it to lyrics.
Yeah, it's not
directed. They're not putting it to music.
Though. It's chaos, and we don't have the directed anger. We don't have, and again, anger is one thing, but it shouldn't be the thing. We should be aiming for change. We should be aiming for improvement, and not just ranting. Without solution and without without reason.
I think music is a wonderful platform to spread a message, but I think it has to be done in a way that is appropriate, approved, so anyhow. I think music has always been, had a relationship back to, I guess, humanity, for lack of a better word.
Well, it's been around for a very long time, and putting messages in music has certainly been around for a very, very, very long time. Goes back about as far as we know that people were musicians and created music. I think that so many, even the ones who pretentiously think they're getting a message across these days, don't have a clue about how to reach people, how to do things. I mean, as much as I dislike rap, I do have to give Eminem credit for some of his lyrics, and I think that he's done a very good job on those lyrics. I don't like the way they're presented. I find it irritating, but that's just me. But you know, most rap rhymes with crap, and that's exactly what you're getting.
You know, I'm glad you brought that up, Terry, because it lets look over across the pond in the UK. And now in Canada, there's a new, I did not know about this form, but it's similar to rap, but it's called grime. And the beats are twice as fast as rap, and they're English guys. And a lot of these are black guys in Great Britain. And they're putting out a whole, they're talking about the way people are looking at issues that are going on globally from a perspective over in England. I think it's interesting. I mean, the point is that there can be these whole new genres of music, and a lot of us don't really know anything about them. But here's something that what I want to say about music is I find that a lot of us get sort of in the grooves of what we're listening to, and then when you step out of that and start your brain just kind of spinning on things you forgot about, things you liked in the past, and start playing some of those different songs, it's really interesting. The things that you've forgotten about, and the passions, the memories that they bring back in your mind and your memory, it always hits me. And especially when doing work at the office during the day, there are certain things I can listen to, certain things I can't. And my productivity is a function of it all. I mean, it's music therapy, like our caller suggested. They always told us on the way to exams to not think about anything and just turn the music up loud and rock out to your favorite songs. So there's a lot to it. You know, also animals. Animals have preferences, musical preferences. Some people say, no, I'm crazy, but I've seen it.
No, they do. One of the things that we find is that if we play music while we're feeding animals, they get to associate the radio with food, And all you have to do is, if you want to check and see if somebody's in a particular enclosure, is just turn on the radio and, you know, see how many heads pop up. That's certainly a true statement. Anyhow, moving rapidly onward to nowhere, let's talk about Mr. Trump for just a moment, if we may, and some of the madness that seems to have taken over the White House. It's really, you know, I said this when this was happening, and I stick to it. I continue to support my view on this. I thought one of two things would happen with Donald Trump. Thing number one is that he might do a good job and surprise everybody. Thing number two is he might throw everything into chaos, piss everybody off, and at least get people up in arms and thinking and doing something and up off their dead asses. It looks like it's the latter, not the former. Yeah, he's done a few things, but they're offset by his just, in many cases, just stupid behavior. Just some of the most childish things you can imagine. We talked a little bit about this before, but somebody should take his phone away from him. It is just ridiculous what goes on with all that. So,
what things do you take issue with? I ask this of everybody.
There are too many to go into, but on a daily basis, he is radically insulting somebody. He is responding to tweets and texts that he has no business even paying attention to. He's getting into fights with movie stars, musical celebrities. He's essentially encouraging some of these ridiculous assemblies, people protesting they know not what. They're doing it because they just don't like the man. And, he's waving, he's fanning the flames. And that is bad for him. It's bad for the country in a lot of ways. And again, if this frustration and anger was more clearly directed at a certain thing, it'd be a different story. But they just, Donald Trump is a devil and that's all there is to it. Well, that's not all there is to it, but that's unfortunately what these people are coming to conclusion-wise because of his behavior. He's doing things that engender so much animosity. It's really sad. And,
well, I think my opinion, if I could, is that a lot of the people who are making the most noise right now have not been involved in politics until this election cycle or very recently, and as insofar as social media has made it the game of the day for people, I've seen people jumping up and down about the. I'm just going to take the travel ban, for example. The first thing everyone jumps at is calling it a Muslim ban, which it is not. There's something called disparate impact. It could impact a lot of Muslims and Muslim nations, but Pakistan is not on that list.
Hang on. Let me stop you for a second. As far as I'm concerned, the travel ban thing is actually very positive, and it's even being supported by the Arab Republic. Their minister has spoken out and said that, the only company or the only countries that it's affecting are the ones with known terrorist cells and terrorist activity. So the Saudis actually are supporting it. I understand the good things that have happened. I understand some of the stuff that's gone on, but they are just absolutely eclipsed by the stuff that's crazy. And, that doesn't do any of us any good.
Well, what I was going to continue to say about this travel ban is when federal judges come in and they say, well, we need to tweak some things. We're going to give emergency relief on this. People were literally on a plane on their way over. Everyone is instantly an expert on temporary injunctive relief and federal law and everything. It's what? what I see is people are reacting to headlines. they're reacting to the talking heads and little sound bites here and there. And the people who are saying the most don't know what the hell they're talking about. And I'm going to say it's good that they were involved, because I lived through many, many, many years of absolute pathetical political apathy, where people didn't know, didn't care. So people are caring. I'm glad that they're caring, but it is incumbent upon people to do more research. And here's what they need. What I think people would be beneficial if people would research history before you speak. Look at history, and look at a lot of the things that people, the Trump opposers, are bashing him on, are things that former presidents on fighting for their team have done and did. We can look at similar things that with his travel ban and bans on different people from different countries. Jimmy Carter did it. A lot of people did it. Bill Clinton, Barack Obama drew up the list. But again, here's what I think is the most perplexing thing to people, is that so much is happening so fast. And I hear this from people of all walks of life. Well, it's too much. It's too soon. To that I say, number one, the man is doing everything that he said he was going to do, including the temporary travel ban. Literally everyone had months to prepare, to the extent he was going to do what he said he was going to do. They had months to prepare for it. Beyond that, I don't know. But things come by so quickly. The travel ban gets eclipsed by, today Rex Tillerson was confirmed as Secretary of State. Last night we had the announcement of who will be our new Supreme Court Justice. There's not enough time for people to react and process the information. And I think because so much has changed so quickly, which we have never seen this much consistently from any president in my lifetime that I can remember, people cannot process, they can't ask the questions, they can't deal with it. And again, it goes back to, there's so much talk about Congress and, what the House and the Senate may do and the nuclear option, that people fail to understand that these executive orders are administrative orders, which is separate from creating law. And, so everyone's confused. They're upset. But this is what I hear from people who are opposed to what President Trump has been doing. It's too much, too quick. They can't respond, and they don't know what's going on.
That's part of it. Part of it is what you said earlier, that, the people don't have any idea what they're complaining about. They're just reacting. I've said that for God knows how long. But Trump is his own worst enemy right now. And he's doing things that make no sense. He's doing things that are destructive. And these things are going to overshadow any positive stuff that he's doing. He continues to believe or claim that he believes there's no global warming, which is a joke. I mean, anybody with an IQ of 32 and the ability to crack an egg knows that we have a very, very serious situation right now that has never happened before in the history of the planet. And this is, this has the potential to kill off us and everything else with it. And it is going to hell in a handbasket. And yet he is lollygagging his way along, pulling funds away from that and, putting them towards financial stuff, which isn't going to do you a whit of good when there's no water to drink and no food to eat. And the sun is nothing but a parched enemy that's bearing down on you. This is just stupid. He's got to wake up to the realities of way too many things, and he's not doing it. We're not seeing it happen. I don't care about who he appoints for what. That's almost secondary to some of the things that are facing us that are significantly more important than that. The very survival of our species. And if you don't give a damn about our species, well, I guess you can live for the moment and then, 10 years from now say, well, we had our fun and that's the end of that. I, for one, can't live that way, nor in good conscience should anyone else be living that way. If you truly care about people and you truly care about our species, you don't put people like Newt Gingrich in power of anything. He's an ignorant fool with outrageous beliefs, and how the hell he gets the ear of anybody is beyond me. The man is just stupid. He's absolutely stupid. I'm not going to use ignorant. I'm going to use stupid. There's just way too much of that going on. And we need to start addressing the real problems, the really serious problems. And we need to do it in a positive way. And Trump needs to mend fences, and he hasn't done that. He's done no fence mending. He just, you know, screw them and the pen goes to the paper. Rather than sitting down and explaining what he's doing and why he's doing it, and, you know, this is what I'm trying to accomplish. He's done none of that. So anyhow, enough of that. Let's go visit a more serene place with Lorena McKennett, a marvelous lady from the UK. She has a beautiful voice. She has a real talent for music. And what's the number we're going to do tonight?
It is The Mask in the Mirror.
That's the album. What's the song we're going to do?
The Mask in the Mirror is what I thought the song was called. The title track is The Mask in the Mirror, and it's 7 minutes long. The full album, The Mask in the Mirror, was 57-something minutes. Well, let's listen and enjoy.
All right. Hello.
Can
Hello?
We do Happy Jack
Hello?
By the Who? Can we do? I'm sorry. I need to. I don't know if that was the right thing. I'm just gonna hit play on this. Let's listen
well,
to this.
Well, yeah, that was
Happy Jack by the Who.
Happy Jack wasn't old, but he was a man. He lived in the sand at the island. The kids would all sing, he was getting grumpy. So they rode on his head, he left very grumpy.
John Entwistle, Keith Moon.
I like that. I like that. Made me happy. I don't know
Peter
if that
Townsend.
Was the right look.
Are you going to let me tell people who the Who were? John
they
Entwistle.
They don't know the Who was.
The bass.
Yeah.
Oh, man, I'm going to slap you. John Entwistle, bass player, arguably the best bass player in rock. Pete Townsend on guitar, Keith Moon on drums, Roger Daltrey vocals. Amazing group when they were at their peak. An amazing group. One of my very, very favorites. That Lorena McKenna thing didn't come over. That's the problem. It was not coming over at all. You're missing most of it. I don't know what the story was, but the song was like fragmented. I apologize to our listeners for that. It's really very beautiful stuff that she does. It was not coming through at all.
Maybe
so,
that's
again,
a bad track. My music research, like the F for that one, had to redeem myself.
Okay, this is a piece of Terry trivia. Okay, Terry trivia.
Yeah.
Was Pete Townsend the first artist to smash a guitar on stage?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I can remember at least two others that may have done it. The Who, when they started to just destroy their equipment on stage, it was not an act of stupidity or madness. If you get to know the individuals from The Who, there was such frustration at the time that they were coming up. The mods, the rockers, and a lot of other things that were going on socially in England. It was a turbulent time, very turbulent time. And they were echoing that frustration. They weren't doing it just to be fun or funny. It sort of happened one day, and it happened more after that. And it was Townsend's perpetual frustration with himself, with life, with his inability to do the things that he thought he should be able to do. Pete Townsend's a very frustrated guy. He was very frustrated for many years. And I think he still is in some ways. Roger Daltrey was a very powerful vocalist, and he was, by the way, the first guitar player in The Who. Townsend took over as lead guitar later on, and Daltrey stuck to the the voice stuff. John Entwistle was a very accomplished musician. He was trained formally on the French horn and a number of other wind instruments. Playing was about as natural to him as anyone I've ever seen. It's just amazing. And Keith Moon, as Townsend has finally admitted, wasn't a drummer. He was more akin to an absolute prodigy. He was amazing. And when he was straight and doing his thing the way he should, no one could touch him. He was unbelievable. So, you know, together, these disparate parts made up The Who. And it really worked. It really, really worked. Anything else, caller, about The Who? I can probably tell you a bit. I worked with them for a while. And very, very interesting experience, to say the least.
One more question, I guess, piece of trivia.
Uh-huh.
My understanding is that Roger Daltrey has lost most of his hearing secondary to stage noise.
Lost most of his hearing.
Is it Pete Townsend? Okay.
Yeah.
Pete
Townsend beat himself up something furious. Roger actually started wearing some protection as time went on. And Townsend did not. And Townsend always liked to get his head right next to his amplifier, and he'd, you know, get screaming feedback out of it and do all kinds of incredible things. Another frustration for Townsend was that he never believed he was a good guitar player. And although he was an unusual guitar player, he was quite good. As time went on, he got better and better. My own personal view of this is they should have quit when John Entwistle died. As a matter of fact, they should have quit when Keith Moon died, or get somebody that could take his place. The guy that they brought in as a drummer just could never hack it. He was trying to fill shoes that were 10 sizes too big for him. And it was pretty sad. The Who just became a shadow of their former selves, and all of that power that appeared on stage just didn't happen anymore. It never, ever. And interestingly, unlike Led Zeppelin, where there were at least two people who could have taken John Bonham's place almost seamlessly, and that is no disrespect to John Bonham. He was a phenomenal drummer, but there were two other people out there who easily could have taken his place, and Zeppelin could have gone on God knows how long, you know, riding the crest of their wave, instead of the comparatively few albums that they did. You know, again, arguably the most famous rock band in the world. And, you know, they did eclipse almost everything and everyone. One of those drummers, by the way, was Ainsley Dunbar. Ainsley could mimic anybody's style. And he was Frank Zappa's drummer for a while, did tons of session work. Ainsley Dunbar was a wonderful drummer. The other guy, I've mentioned him before, was Ronnie Tutt. He was Elvis' drummer. He was a power drummer. And he had a style that was very similar to John Bonham's. He could have adopted John Bonham's style very quickly. And at one point in time, I had gotten almost to the brink of getting Ronnie to go over to England to try out for the position. They were talking about seriously doing a tour, and then the whole thing fell apart again. Ron Tutt was Elvis' drummer, and to this day, he is Neil Diamond's drummer. So, little trivia for folks, little bits and pieces.
You know, Terry, seeing their shadow or living in a shadow. This brings me to Groundhog Day, which is tomorrow.
Day. And what's the name of the groundhog?
Punxsutawney Phil.
Yeah, there you go. Punxsutawney Phil. And there have been a number of Phils over the years. So we'll see what happens when he comes out, if he sees his shadow or not. Groundhogs are wonderful little creatures, and they're treated as pests. They're very intelligent little rodents. They can be very personable, although they do have something of a temper. They make remarkably good pets if you know how to handle them. And they're smart as hell. They really are. They're very smart little creatures. I raised a couple of them over the years, and they were a lot of fun. They really were. They'll fit in with a family as long as the family knows how to deal with them. They can be mischievous, and as I said, they can throw tantrums too. They have quite the little temper on them. So let's see what happens when he sees his shadow, and you know, it sort of brings to mind the movie Groundhog Day, Bill Murray movie, odd movie, very odd movie. I don't know if I like it or not. To this day, I'm not sure if I like that movie or not.
Yeah, I kind of feel the same way about that one. It's kind of an odd movie, but movies, entertainment, all these things make me think of the big Fort Worth Stock Show and Rodeo that's going on right now. I went to the rodeo on Saturday. I went to the morning show, which is good because no one was, no one died. We did have a rider who was injured in saddle bronc riding. And later, and I think of the 2 o'clock show, there was a horse that banged his head up on the side of the railings, and the horse died. And this is something that happens. There's, you know, no one is going to tell you that rodeo is not a high-risk activity. It certainly is. We all know that. It's not surprising. However, PETA is coming out now in their infinite wisdom and calling for people to boycott rodeos and calling the treatment of animals in rodeos inhumane. In a statement they put out, they said, "It's 2017, a time when animal circuses are shutting down and SeaWorld is on the skids. Rodeos are way out of step with public opinion, and it's time for them to be relegated to the pages of history books. PETA encourages everyone to stay away from rodeos and support legislation that protects animals from this abuse." That, ladies and gentlemen, is my new angry PETA voiceover voice.
Mm-hmm. A group of ignorant fools who understand nothing about animals and have no business telling the rest of us what we should or shouldn't do. If you want to be active in protecting animals, then you should join your local humane society. If you want to be active in understanding animals, then you should join zoological societies. But enough of this bullshit, ignorant swine who have driven a wedge between humans and the rest of the creatures that we live on this planet with. Man has always interacted with animals, and man always should interact with animals.
These animals are very well cared for.
Yes,
these
are
athletes. The bulls are athletes. They get their own scores.
They, you know, here's the deal. Not a lot of animals die at rodeos. It's rare, probably more rare than players that die in football or some of the other contact sports that are really very, very tough. Yes, they are athletes, and we have bred them for this. These animals were designed to do this.
And they love it,
by
the way.
That way.
They're
What's
happy.
That?
They're happy they love it.
Well,
mounted shooting is one of my
whether you
want to
get
bucket
into that
list
or not,
things. They're happy.
You know,
they enjoy it.
That's going to require going into some ethology, animal behavior. I'm not prepared to do that this show. But anyhow, these absolute fools from PETA, I'm not going to call them swine because the pigs deserve better than that, absolutely are ruining huge pieces of our culture. But more importantly, they are driving a wedge between human beings and the rest of the creatures that inhabit this planet. You cannot have empathy. I just did 2 educational days this last weekend trying to educate people about conservation, trying to educate people about treating animals correctly, being involved with animals, doing the right thing. This bullshit legislation stuff that they do nonstop, power plays by ignorant people who want nothing more than to control others. They give a damn about animals. They do not care. What they care about and what they get people whipped up about is absolute foolishness. You know, what we could do without is PETA. What we could do without is HSUS. What we could do without is Animal Defense Fund League. These are radical groups. You don't like radical Islam? Well, then you shouldn't like PETA, and you shouldn't like HSUS, and you shouldn't like Animal Defense Fund League, because that's exactly what you're looking at. The same type of radical.
Absolutely. In a less radical, well, actually, this might be a radical suggestion. Heinz Ketchup Company has put out a petition to avoid people who enjoy too much Super Bowl partying. They want Monday after the Super Bowl to be a national holiday, meaning a day off of work. So, and
Trump's inauguration would be the other one, wouldn't it?
I will agree that that's retarded. Unless you want to call all inauguration days national holidays, that would make some sense. People want to stay home and watch it, but we have a lot of holidays, and our holidays are really messed up, I think, in the U.S. I think that the folks in Europe have it right. The people in Spain taking naps in the middle of the day and going on their holiday things. We have just kind of weird, jacked up, you know, some of them are Hallmark holidays, you know, all these different days for this and that. And when are the banks open? When are the banks closed? I'm more likely get annoyed that the banks are closed. But anyways, for all y'all who are very interested in the Super Bowl, which I am, but I'm not. I hope that the Falcons win to beat the Patriots. But the day after, I actually have to be up at 6 a.m. to drive to Austin to present our HD representative with pictures from our town for his new office art. In other news, shifting gears, Johnny Depp is in the news, and his spending is in the news. Lawyers are in the news, and lawsuits
sure
are flying back and forth. Johnny Depp says, they took my money. They said, you idiot, you spent it all. So there's a little bit of he said, she said in this. I want to know how this lawsuit said that Depp paid more than $75 million and bought 14 homes, including a French chateau, a chain of – here I'm thinking that I'm some sort of obtuse person for wanting to have my main home and my country home in the same state and thinking I'm an – you know, that's wasteful. But Johnny Depp, man,
I didn't know that he made that much money. That one.
No kidding. I don't have a 150-foot yacht. I don't have private jets. Yeah. I don't have 12 storage facilities to maintain my memorabilia. My Lord.
I saw an interview with Johnny Depp on the Actors Guild.
Yeah, what did
he say? It might have been about 5 years ago. It was once Pirates of the Caribbean 1, 2, and maybe 3 had been out. But you know, it started this chain. And Depp talked about you know, the different roles he had played in some A movies, some B movies, whatever. And he said, but suddenly, you know, you put all this makeup on me, give me a wig and give me jewelry and mascara, and I can buy islands. And that was, you know, he was speaking directly to the contract with Disney for Pirates of the Caribbean.
Yeah.
I like Depp as an actor. I think he seems like an odd person.
Well, he is.
Eccentric,
really.
Or,
he's,
you know,
both.
Eccentric's usually good in theater, but at what point, here's what I want to say, at what point are you a whore? At what point are you an actor slut when you will just literally do anything for money and not the art or the, you know, not the art value of it? You know, I mean, it begs the question.
You know, I'm sorry, but with Depp, he's one of the very few, you know, we were talking about stars and we were talking about people who were heavy hitters. He's one of the very few out there that is a heavy hitter and has the ability to play diverse roles and play them very, very well. I've seen him in any number of things, all the way from Chocolat to, of course, Caribbean, which are not my favorite thing that Depp has ever done.
There's
tons of stuff that Depp has done, and he's done it superbly. He's been in some turkeys as well, there's no doubt about it. But he seems to pick and choose what he wants to do. As far as his as far as his money and his spending, you know, would I believe it's out of control? Yeah. So what else is new? Is he the first actor that's ever done that? Hell no. He goes all the way back to Abbott and Costello and lots of other people. They're not great money managers. And one day they wake up and say, holy Christmas, I thought I earned $34 million in the last 6 months, and instead I'm $20 million in debt. They need to have effective money management. One of the firms out there, Gelfand, Rennert, and Feldman, it's an old Jewish accounting firm, and they handle a lot of the really, really big guys out in Hollywood. They handle Dolly Parton. They do handle Neil Diamond. They used to handle Michael Jackson until his father decided he was better at it. Handle a lot of the really big guys. And the thing about them is they won't you do that. These guys are absolutely terrible when it comes to, you know, they will watch your money. And the idea is that they want your principal guarded. Whatever is above and beyond the principal that you put in there in the first place, that's fine. You can go spend it. But they want your principal reserved and conserved. That's their theory, and that's the way they operate. So if you're worth $200 million today, they want you to be worth $200 million next year, or whatever the equivalent is for inflation.
Don't invade the principal.
These guys were amazing. They were amazing.
Didn't the same issue happen to Elton John?
Oh my God! He's just horrible, though. I mean, he's worse than Johnny Depp by far.
I guess the first time it happened, though, or maybe the worst time it happened, it was outrageous. I mean, and it really was quite outrageous.
Yep. Yeah. No, he was just ridiculous. You know, he was so far in debt. The lucky for him that he could go out and go on tour, you know, he could have that value that people could leverage against, or else he would have been in jail probably for the stuff that he did. My God, he was just unbelievable.
Okay, I have a piece of Johnny Depp trivia. Johnny Depp trivia. What was the first movie, theater movie, that Johnny Depp starred in?
21 Jump Street.
No, that's a TV show.
Edward Scissorhands.
Okay. What is the first movie Depp ever did?
Edward Scissorhands.
No, he starred in it. I'm saying, what was the first movie that Depp was ever in?
Tell us.
Okay, you're going to have to help me out on this one, okay? I'm not a slasher film person. Who was the guy that wore the mask? Was it Jason?
Jason.
Okay, well, it depends upon, there's several that have worn masks, but yeah, go ahead.
Well, it wasn't the Jamie Lee Curtis one, okay? It wasn't Halloween. It was like the second one that came out that was like that. I think Johnny Depp is cut in half with a chainsaw.
Oh. Hey, you got to start your career somewhere.
Bruce Dean, and then I think 21 Jump Street, the series came after that.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yep.
I agree with Terry. I think he is an incredible actor and very diverse.
Yeah, the first movie he starred in, though, was Edward Scissorhands.
Yeah, I would agree. I don't disagree with that. Yeah. Which, you know, I really liked, but a lot of people did not like Edward Scissorhands. But I didn't like it. For what it was. You didn't like it?
Yeah.
Interesting.
I didn't like it, no.
I thought
it was
great.
Bizarre,
you know what I thought's a good movie? Beetlejuice. I love Beetlejuice. He wasn't in it, but...
Oh, Beetlejuice was a lot of fun. It was a fun movie.
Yeah, I loved Beetlejuice.
That whole movie was just fun. You know, good laugh and lots of fun and good music.
Much better performance for Winona Ryder than her recent performance at the SAG Awards, but that's my own editorial. Hey, we're out of time, y'all. I'm so sorry. We didn't talk about tax returns. We didn't talk about influence. Next week on Hell No, the radio show. We're almost out of time. Time to say goodnight.
Good night,
everyone. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Au revoir à tout à l'heure, mes amis.
Yeah, what he said.